This past week, a federal appeals court ruled in favor of two companies that make software which allows internet users to share movies and music. The decision was a setback for entertainment industry efforts to control online file sharing. While the major record labels struggle with that issue, one part of the industry is doing quite well. Independent labels have been an influential part of the music business since the dawn of recorded sound. Marcy Silman of member station KUOW goes behind the doors of a few of today's independent rock labels.
Seattle's Sub Pop Records officially opened for business 18 years ago.
And this is the warehouse.
Sub Pop co-founder Jonathan Poneman, dressed in jeans, a t-shirt, and a brown cardigan, looks more like Mr. Rogers than an industry tycoon as he shows off the hundreds of records his company has released over the years.
You have your Mud Honey, Afghan Wigs, Love Battery. This is like grunge here, all right?
Okay.
You have, like, the dark years are in and around here.
Poneman and his partner Bruce Pavitt founded Sub Pop to record local bands they liked.
All of the great record labels that we both had admired growing up, Stax out of Memphis, Motown out of Detroit, Chess out of Chicago, they would work with artists from outside of the region, but there was still very much a regional focus.
Sub Pop's influential catalog includes the first two albums by a band from Aberdeen, Washington, called Nirvana. By the mid-1990s, Nirvana and many of Sub Pop's other high-profile bands had been signed away by major labels. The company found itself in serious financial trouble. It closed its Seattle retail outlet and laid off more than half of the label's employees. Finally, in 1995, Bruce Pavitt and Jonathan Poneman sold 49% of their company to Warner Music.
In retrospect, I think that it was a silly deal. I think it was a prelude to the reckless, greedy culture that was just emerging at that time. What happened to Bruce and I was tantamount to the whole dot-com boom situation that was going on, is where something becomes greatly overvalued, you cash out, and then now what?
Poneman doesn't regret making the deal with Warner, which still owns almost half his label, but he says Sub Pop might have been better off learning to live within its means. Meanwhile, on the East Coast, another of the era's most successful independent labels was also struggling. New York's Matador Records, which built its reputation on such artists as Pavement, Guided by Voices, and Liz Phair, entered into a partnership with Atlantic Records. The partnership ended in 1996. 3 years later, again strapped for cash, Matador sold half its holding to Beggars Group, a British company. Patrick Amory, Matador's general manager, says last year the company's sales were up 60%, and he's confident Matador will continue to attract good bands, leery of dealing with the majors.
We've been around for 15 years, and we're not going anywhere. Everybody at major labels these days is getting fired right and left, switching jobs. I think there's a level of stability with Matador and the other independents that they don't get from the majors.
In fact, independent labels are a significant part of the music business, says Billboard magazine senior writer Chris Morris. Since 1992, he's written a column called Declaration of Independence.
For a long time, independently distributed records have accounted for 17% or thereabouts of the overall business year to year. In fact, quite often, the independent sector of the business was the number two distributor after Universal, which was the largest of all the companies, thanks to a merger during the 90s. The independent side is a really powerful force commercially.
Among the oldest and most stable of truly independent labels is Chicago's Touch & Go Records. In 1981, 6 years before Sub Pop was founded, a 16-year-old Ohio high school student named Corey Rusk was playing in a punk band.
Back then, there certainly weren't major labels that were interested in the sort of stuff that we were doing, and so really we just decided to put out our own record.
Like Sub Pop's Poneman in Seattle and dozens of other independent entrepreneurs, Rusk was a music industry outsider.
Given that I was a teenager in high school when it started and that I never went to university or college or never worked in the music industry other than, you know, running my own label, you know, I had no preconceived notions of how things were supposed to be done or how things were done in the music industry.
Rusk says unlike Sub Pop and Matador, Touch & Go did not experience a dip in the 1990s. While he won't disclose numbers, he says the last 5 years have been strong, and Touch & Go artists have shared in the good times. Touch & Go has never had written contracts. The verbal agreement is that the label splits the net profits with its bands 50-50, a model that's been adopted by other independent labels.
Our primary focus has always been the artists being treated fairly, both in terms of being paid fairly and having creative control over every aspect of what they do, you know, not telling them what to do.
Touch & Go's roster includes such established bands as the Mekons and critically acclaimed newer groups like TV on the Radio. Throughout the history of recorded music, there have always been independent labels that achieved a cachet and built a following for the music they released, music that was often ignored by the majors. Josh Rosenfeld, co-founder of Seattle's Barsuk Records, says that's one of the reasons that listeners are looking to independent labels today when they can get so much music online.
The digital age has done a couple of things. It has made distribution a lot easier for independent bands, and it's also made it a lot easier for bands to record their own music cheaply. Those are both great things, except that the latter of those things has resulted in a real glut of music. It's so easy for anyone to just go make a record now. And I think that from a listener's standpoint, one of the main functions of a record label is kind of to filter and to be a curator.
Barsuk has established its reputation on the success of the band Death Cab for Cutie, whose most recent album has sold more than 160,000 copies since its release last fall.
I've got a hunger twisting my stomach into knots that my tongue is tied off. My brain's repeating, if you've got an impulse, let it out. But they never make it past my mouth. Ba-ba, this is the sound of settling.
The majors are courting Death Cab for Cutie, but guitarist Chris Wallace says so far none of the offers has been tempting.
The road to being on a major label is paved with the bones of our friends' bands who have been on major labels and who have had terrible experiences. That's never ever going to happen with us on an independent label that we have a personal relationship with.
The current disorder at the major labels is providing new opportunities for the independents, says Billboard's Chris Morris.
But dating back to the dawn of R&B and rock and roll, independent companies have always been able to thrive because their ears are closer to the street. And they just can jump on a trend faster and develop it more quickly than a slower-moving major label counterpart can.
These days, the major labels focus almost all of their attention and resources on the handful of stars that can guarantee a return. In the age of the internet, some don't think that's a sustainable business model.
I believe the major of tomorrow is going to look a lot more like the Sub Pop of today.
And for Jonathan Poneman, that's a good place to be. The Sub Pop co-founder says his company is in the third year of a tremendous boom. Sub Pop shipped more than 1 million albums in the past year. That's small potatoes compared to the majors, who might consider that a good sales figure for a single recording. But Jonathan Poneman advises the majors to think smaller.
We may never own Learjets. It may never be quite the powerful, glamorous job, allegedly, that it may have been back in the dark old days, but who cares? And let me tell you, a decent living can still be made because there are a lot of people who still buy vinyl. There are a lot of people who still buy CDs. I think the most important thing in the music industry continues to be finding the artists that people care about.
For NPR News, I'm Marcy Silman in Seattle.
This is the sound of settling. Ba-ba, ba-ba.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.
My stomach into knots.